session number 23147, Reel 2.
Norman Dorr, Reel 2. So the dockers did cooperate, did they?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so you got loaded. How did they load your carrier?
I don't know. I think it must have been by crane because they didn't have drive-ons, I don't think, in those days. I don't know.
What sort of a ship was it you were going on?
Well, it was the SS Pampas, but other than that, I don't remember very much about it.
Yeah.
I know we were out in the channel for some time because it was heavy storms, and we were all feeling a little bit queasy side, and they couldn't land because of the bad weather.
Mm. What were the conditions like on board?
Well, they were a bit crowded, but not too bad at all.
Mm. And, were you all seasick?
Well, I don't think we were seasick, but we felt very much. I think there were some, but I wasn't, fortunately.
Yeah. So you were anchored out in the channel for a while?
Yes, for a while.
Did you hear what was going on the French coast?
Not whilst we were on the boat, no.
Mm-hmm. And eventually you went in. Was that daytime or nighttime?
Daytime, also.
Daytime, right. Yeah. What, can you remember that scene as you came into the French coast?
Yes, I can. When I was, before we went to abroad, I came down to Bovington Camp on what they called a waterproofing course for on a Bren Gun car, so you make it waterproof in deeper water, you know, sealed up the sides and so on. Mm. And then I went to a camp near Winchester, which was set up specially for waterproofing, and I helped to teach people to waterproof other Bren Gun cars, you know. And so I went back to the knowing all about this waterproofing lark. So when we came off the boat, you could land in quite deeper water than a normal carrier would take. Mm. And but we had what we called a dry landing. We weren't in danger of flooding, you know. We came in quite safely into the shore to land on the French coast, on the French beach.
Was there any noise going on at that time? Was there any sounds of guns?
You could hear distant gun firing, yes, you could.
Mm. How organised was the beach? Because I suppose there was a lot of you going in.
It seemed to be very well organised, because it was quite a few days after D-Day, and then things had got sorted out quite well by that time, you know.
Mm. So you drove off the beach?
Yeah.
Yeah, and where to then?
Oh goodness, where did we go to? We somewhere near Bayou. We curled up into a big field, and for our first time, yeah.
Yeah, so that was your first night.
Yeah.
In France, yeah. So did you dig in, or?
I don't think we. I think we were sort of fairly well back from the front line. I don't think we did have to dig in at that stage. Mm. Mm.
So, did you have any idea of where you'd be going, or whether you'd be staying there, or did anyone tell you anything?
No, it was sort of minute-to-minute thing. You just told to do it, and you got on and did it. You know, right. Didn't sort of have any plan laid out to tell us what was happening. Mm.
Mm. So, were you in that field long, or?
Well, our first attack was on the 10th of July, and we landed on the 19th of June. So.
Right.
So we had a little while before, yeah.
So tell me about that first attack.
That was on Hill 112. We formed up at a village called Etterville, I think it was. And I remember when we started to go, it was all excitement, and the shells were flying about and lots of bangs and noises. And I remember a couple of regimental motorcyclists, DRs, controlling this through this village of Etterville, and the shell landed, and they were directing traffic on a corner in the middle of the village, and I remember two of those getting bowled over by shells as we went through. But you know, as everything was rushing straight forward, no stopping or anything like that, I suppose someone stopped to help them. But
so it was quite exciting, sort of.
The adrenaline was flying, you're going to be sure. And we finished up in a potato field, and it started to dig in like frantic, you know, and the shells were simply flying over our heads then, because we were putting down quite a tremendous barrage. And I remember Bob Phillips and I were digging in like mad by the side of the carrier, and there was a big cornfield stretching right up across in front of us, going up towards Hill 112, and there was a house behind us where apparently someone shouted there's a sniper in the house, and I think there's a Middlesex regiment who are a machine gun regiment. They turned their machine guns on this house and virtually cut the windows out the wall where the sniper was. Anyway, they quietened him down. But I can remember being in that potato patch, and we were pretty scared then, I feel, you know.
Yeah. So you were dug in. So where was your carrier?
Beside the carrier on the potato patch, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the troops were advancing up this cornfield, and there were shots firing, and I can remember a German bloke up in the tree getting shot out of the tree, and it was pretty hectic. And then they started bringing back prisoners of war, and some were only kids of about 14, 15 years of age, you know. Yeah, it's pretty horrible, that was.
Yeah, and of course I suppose the 5th Dorsets had a lot of casualties that day.
We had quite a lot. I've got a list of the casualties of the 5th Dorsets right through the war, yeah, and the dates that they were killed.
Did you see the casualties coming back?
I saw quite a lot coming back, and the ambulance chaps, you know, the stretcher bearers are taking them away, and it wasn't very nice.
Yeah, so it was very real then.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, a lot of these people you'd have known, I suppose.
All of them are pretty well, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. So how long were you there at Hill 112?
10 days altogether.
Really?
Yeah. I got attached after that first attack. I got attached to C Company, which was Major Hartwell was company commander. Mm-hmm. And with him, I had to go around afterwards picking up guns and things of people that were killed or wounded that were left lying about. And I remember Major Hartwell and an officer, I don't know what regiment he was, who came to see him. And we were, war correspondent came to the regiment.
Sorry,
a war correspondent.
Do you know his name?
No, I don't. And I know a member of Major Hartwell, George Hartwell, and I, and this war correspondent, well, I was going around collecting up the stuff, and an airburst came over and killed this correspondent, hit him right on the head and killed him, threw him dead right beside us, you know.
Really?
Mm. It's pretty horrible, that was.
What was Major Hartwell like?
George Hartwell, he was a great bloke. Yeah. He's Hartwell of the Bournemouth motor car people. George, yeah.
Mm. So, you'd known him all these years of training, had you?
Well, no, he was a major with the Dorset Territorial Army. Right. And so he took over the car platoon at one occasion. Mm. And
What sort of age was he?
George, I suppose, he was a good bit older than I was, I suppose. In those days, he was in his 40s or something like that.
Quite a mature man.
Yes, he was quite a mature
service,
officer, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, very respected. He got the DCM.
Right, so back to Hill 112. So 10 days is a long time. How continuous was it?
Pardon?
How continuous was the...
Constant counter-attacks and shell fire and phosphorus shells. I was with C Company, and we were, of course, as soon as we got a chance, we dug in, and I was near the end of this particular line, and just across there was a big haystack, and Jerry fired across some phosphorus shells and set fire to this haystack, and out of the burning hay came two snipers, and
Two of their snipers.
Two of their snipers had been in this haystack, and a lot of our chaps had been getting nicked with bullets, yeah, and nobody knew quite where it was coming from, and that's where these guys were in this haystack. Yeah. And who was the officer? I forget who our officer was, but I know he came across like a madman. Newton, Major Newton, was in charge of the company. And he came rushing across and grabbed my rifle with a bayonet on and went across and rammed it into these snipers as they were on the ground. Well, everybody was angry, you know, those days. You weren't quite acting reasonably.
Yeah. Under enormous pressure.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, after days.
Yeah.
Days and nights of that noise, apart from anything else, I'd imagine.
And then...
And those snipers have taken out a lot of good men, I expect, too, haven't they?
Yes, they were.
Yeah.
And then I got a call to say some of our blokes had got wounded, and I went to pick them up. And it was under fire then, and of course, a bring gun carrier gives you a certain amount of protection from small arms fire. Mm. And I took these.
So whereabouts you were told to take your carrier?
To where these chaps were.
Yeah, was that forward of where you were?
Yes, it was. And, right.
And did you take someone else with you?
Yeah, my gunner went with me, Reg Cobb. Uh-huh. Yeah. And we picked this chap up and took him across to battalion headquarters. And whilst we were there, the artillery, the gunners, the German guns were firing quite heavily at us, you know. And I remember we put this chap into an ambulance, and the ambulance went down across the field to go to the back area, and the ambulance got bashed, and all in it were killed. So the poor bloke that I'd rescued, or picked up in the bring gun car, he didn't get very far after all. And as the artillery fire was so heavy at that particular time, then I stayed the night at battalion headquarters in a chap named Exley, Fred Exley. He got the MM, Fred. He had a lovely chap. Right. And I shared his trench for the night. So.
Did you?
Yeah, I remember that well.
Yeah. So, had relationships changed since you'd been under fire? You know what I mean? It sounds as though things were, you know, you were saying, yes, the officer bayoneted the snipers. How did you react to that?
I think you sort of got acclimatised to it by now. You're getting a little bit used to battle, I suppose.
Because yeah. Bayonetting is quite just a brutal sort of thing to do,
oh,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, you could have shot them.
Yeah.
But he thought.
Different matter, yeah. A sheer intense anger, I suppose, to think that his blokes were getting killed and these are the guys that did it.
Yeah. Were you revolted by that?
Not a bit. No, I could have happily done it myself.
Yeah. Yeah. So moods and attitudes have changed quite a lot.
Absolutely,
in those 10
days. Yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah.
So did you hate the Germans?
I suppose I did, really. I don't know. We used to say the only good German was a dead one, so...
Yeah. Right. So 10 days on Hill 112.
Yeah.
And the Dorsets did take heavy casualties, I know.
Yeah, we had quite a few casualties there. Mm.
So then you were replaced by someone else, were you?
Yes.
Mm. What had you achieved in those 10 days?
Mm. Well, we pretty well captured Hill 112, which was a very, very important place because it had such a vision of the whole of the area of Normandy, you know. They used to say the person who held 112 held Normandy, so it was a big advantage to have gained that ground, you know.
Mm. So you felt you'd achieved something?
Oh, yes, I think so.
Yeah. So then you were pulled back to where? Did you get a rest then? Or?
We went back near Bayeux again, I believe, because I remember we had across the fields we could hear the loudspeakers that they set up, I suppose, to entertain the troops. Izzy Bond was the star, and Vera Lynn records were being played,
really?
And we could hear all across the fields, you know, from where we were camped, and
really?
I thoroughly enjoyed it.
You didn't get to go and see it yourself?
Oh, no, we didn't see any shows, but I think it must have been records rather than the persons themselves, I think, you know.
What a contrast. You'd come off Hill 112 and you're suddenly camping. I mean, it's in the summer and there's Vera Lynn singing away in the distance.
Yeah.
Extraordinary picture, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah.
They all had a great, great liking for Vera Lynn, I think, because of what she did during the war.
Yeah. So what was the mood? I mean, your carrier, I mean, you'd been in action in Hill 112, but how you were in support of the infantry, would I be right there? Yes, yeah. So tell me what exactly your carrier crew had been doing when you were, I mean, you were stationary on Hill 112 a lot of the time.
Yes.
And what would you be doing?
Well, we were in amongst the infantry troops, you know, and doing likewise to them. If you saw anything, you shoot at it, you know, that sort of thing. And when you hear the shells coming, they got your head down and so on.
So you weren't moving very often?
Oh, no, we didn't move once we were up in on Hill 112.
Right.
Yeah.
So you were acting as infantry, weren't you?
Yeah.
For the mobile troops.
Yes, right. Mm.
Right. So when you got back, moved back for your bit of rest, what was the mood? I mean, everybody must have lost a lot of friends.
Well, we didn't have many losses in the Bren Gun cars in our platoon at all. You know.
Right.
And we did lose some, I mean, some good friends, you know. Yeah. But
you'd seen a lot of people that you knew, presumably, out of the regiment.
And yeah.
Yeah. Did that have a sort of effect on you at the time?
No, I don't think so. You sort of took it in your stride. You knew that was the inevitable happening, you know.
Yeah, it's youth, isn't it? So, how long did you get to rest? A good while? Or?
No, I'm afraid my memory is failing me, but on I don't really know how long.
Right, yeah, but a reasonable length. Of
time. Yes.
You can remember if it was very short or very long, wouldn't you? Yeah. So, were you getting all hot food and everything?
Oh, yes.
The provision of...
When we were back there, we sort of made up for when we were up on Hill 112. They fed us very well with rations, you know.
Did they?
Yeah.
And were you able to rest? Because you must have been very tired, apart from the else. I mean, lack of sleep.
Yes, I suppose we were. I can't remember very much about it. But
So, from there, you went on to move on then?
Well, I got all the names of the villages that we went through. Bayeux, St. Gabriel.
Right. What do you remember about Bayeux? Anything? Or the fighting was over then, was it?
Oh, yeah. Bayeux has been taken.
So what sort of state was the town in?
Bayeux didn't seem to have a great deal of damage to it, which was very fortunate. Because it got the most beautiful cathedral. Because I've been back there many times since.
And were the townspeople friendly? Did you get a chance to walk about there? Or
not at that stage in the proceedings. No, the poor people, I felt so desperately sorry for them.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yes, because, I mean, the French people, it was all being fought in their gardens, wasn't it?
Terrible, yeah. I always remember we attacked the village of Chaux on one occasion. And I can remember... crouching behind the wall of the church. I've been back there since and seen it. And the poor old French people were coming back, pushing wheelbarrows and prams with a few of their possessions on, looking absolutely bedraggled and starving, and terrible sight that was. And at that moment, the 15th Highland Regiment were putting in an attack, playing their bagpipes. It stuck in my mind behind the Chaux church wall, the three of us. Our Major Atherton, who'd left us a few days before and taken over command of another regiment, he was killed in Chaux churchyard the day before we were there.
Really?
And
had you heard about that then?
I hadn't then, no. One or two of ours were injured at Chaux, some of our chaps. But
what was going on at Chaux? Were the Germans still hiding in some of the buildings?
Well, another regiment had done the initial attack on Chaux and driven them out, but there was quite a lot of fighting in Chaux, and the churchyard bore marks on the church tower where the shrapnel pieces and bullets had hit it.
So what were you doing? You described how three of you were sheltering in the churchyard.
Yeah, we were about to go into another attack, I believe, at that stage. Yeah.
In your carrier?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you had it parked in the churchyard.
Yeah, that's right.
And you heard the piper?
The Scotch piper, we saw them going on up forward, you know, they were going into an attack then from Chaux.
So what other places, if you run roughly in order, and if you tell me what you remember about being in those places?
Well, I got Bayeux, St. Gabriel, Vienne Bassin, Poutin Bassin, Chaux, then Tormeville.
Do you remember incidents at any of those places?
No, I'm afraid I don't.
Right.
The Mesnil-Patry, Horseshoe Wood was on Hill 1-2, and Chateau de Fontaine was the building that we actually fought to take, I think, on Hill 112, the chateau.
Tell
which
me
was
about that chateau.
Was extremely damaged and battered it was by that time. And when I went back, 1982, many years after, I couldn't even find it, so I don't know whether they demolished it or what they did.
So how did you took that in the end?
Yes, we took Chateau Fontaine.
Yeah. So how was that done, and what did you do in the attack?
Well, I went as a mule, a company mule to C Company, and stayed with C Company, but I don't remember in the fighting Chateau Fontaine one of the companies took it, obviously.
Right, yeah. So you said you were a mule?
Well, they called it a company mule, the Brent Gun car, right, that went to the company. They called it the company mule because it carried all the spare guns and ammo and any gear they wanted carried, you know.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. So where to next? What other places have you gotten? What do you remember?
Londy, Caumont, Cagny, Jerks, Le Bing, Andefontaine, Clemsville, the Roguery, then Mont Pincon was the next major battle that I think our people went in for, and that was another big vantage point. And I don't remember the true facts of it, but it was some subterfuge that the Germans thought they were being heavily attacked by more people than they were, and the Dorsets and Hampshires were involved in taking Mont Pincon in the end.
So what did you do in that attack? What was your carrier doing?
No, I'm sorry. I must be a bit disappointing, but I don't honestly remember.
That's right, that's right. Mm. Some bits you remember and some you don't. Yeah. It's always the same, yeah.
And Clemsville, La Roguery, and then Mont Pincon, then Procy, I do remember that one. Procy was on the 14th of August, I believe it was a Saturday. And I was driving back with the colonel then, of course. And Colonel Bill Code, who was with us went across on D-Day with us, he was our colonel, grand guy was Bill
was
Code.
He a sort of old-fashioned
soldier? Oh, he's a real, real soldier, through and through.
Yeah.
Lovely man. But I think he'd gone to take over the brigade at that particular time. And we had Colonel Venner, who stood in for Colonel Code.
Right. Is he a different sort of a chap?
He was much the same sort of man, right. A senior sort of chap as well. And we were to attack Procy on this Saturday, and we came over the brow of a hill, and there was a village laid out before us, and started down the hill, and there was lots and lots of shouting at the sides of the road, and I stopped immediately, and sergeant came running up and he said, "Yes, don't come down here, the road's mined to hell." And he had his mine detector with him, and there was a mine only a matter of a foot or so in front of the track of my Brown Gun car when I'd stopped. And another 2 seconds or less, we'd have been sky high, you know, that's mine. And so we gently reversed back over our tracks over the brow of the hill to wait for the mines to be cleared out of this bit of road. So when we got the okay to go, we went down into the village and stopped in the village square, and I can remember that village is over there now.
Mm-hmm.
And the colonel got out with the gunner, and he went forward to see the forward troops who were still fighting, and we were there in the village square, and Jerry started to shell us like mad, and the intelligence officer, I don't remember his name off the cuff, he said, "Come on in here." So we dived into this house, and there was a lovely big cellar. And the gunner, the wireless op, and I were in the cellar with the IO, and he was handing around his whiskey flask, which was very welcome. And the Jerry demolished the house over our heads. We feel that we might have been in view of the German gun. Anyway, we were there, and eventually the gunnery stopped, and the colonel came back, and he said, "Let's get out of here quick." So we shot back over the hill to where we were making the battalion headquarters and making camp that night. So Sandy Powell, my gunner, and wireless op, and I just dug our trench, and across the road was a big shattered old house that had been shelled a lot. So we said, "Let's go over and get a bit of timber to put over the top of the trench to give us a bit of shelter." So of course we went across the road and was pulling these bits of wood apart, and Jerry must have seen us then, because he put some shells straight through the roof of the house above our heads, and we come out showered in dirt and dust and bits of wood and stuff. So we ran back across the road. I remember we were nearly hysterical, laughing our silly heads off, having us escape these 88s, which were pretty dynamite things, you know.
Do you know where the Germans were actually firing from?
No, I don't. All we know is these shells started hitting the house, and we were plastered with plaster and dust all over. So we rang back across the road and dived into our trench again. And that night, another regiment put in attack, and like regiments will when they're under the excitement, I suppose, they missed their direction. And some of their mortars landed right beside where we were and injured three of our blokes. And
oh, no.
So I thought, well, I should never forget today. So I had a guardian angel that day.
You seem to cope with it quite well.
We're laughing like a couple of clowns when we went back across the road. You wouldn't believe it true, but...
So you remember that day, yeah?
I remember that day, yeah.
So where next?
Where did we go? Prusy, St. Simeon, Falaise Gap.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was that. Shocking, wasn't it?
You came through after...
Yes, they'd all gone.
Yeah.
And there was all the German, was it German 7th Army, I think it was, that was trapped and slaughtered there. And it was slaughter, you know.
Mm.
There was miles of it. And I know I collected some souvenirs, about half a dozen Luger guns, and which I flogged later to some Americans. I shouldn't mention that, should I?
Oh, I think you can now. I think an amnesty.
But that certainly was. The most horrific sight you ever saw. Dead horses and stuff all over the place, you know.
Mm.
Yeah.
Did that alter the way you felt about the war, what you were doing?
No, I don't think so. I suppose basically you felt, well, they started it and they deserve it. I don't think I felt a great deal of sympathy.
Right. So then on through Falaise to
Argentan, Evreux, St. Hilaire. I don't remember much of these. Simeon, Vernon. That was the Rhine crossing. The river, the town of Vernon was on the River Seine.
Mm.
And we went down into the Vernon, and the Germans had just been driven out across the river, and they were getting the people that, what do they used to call them, the people that helped the Germans, and the ladies,
the collaborators,
and the ladies, and they were cutting their hair off and parading them up the street. Goodness. That was a bit pitiful to see. Some of these girls, you know, I suppose they were wrong, but there it was.
So you crossed the Seine at Vernon?
Yeah, well, they had the bridge had been destroyed, and there quite a lot of people got lost. The Royal Engineers got lost putting the bridge across, and eventually they had this Bailey Bridge over. And then we stayed in the other side of the river at the village of town of Vernonette.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's Normandore, end of Reel 2.